Welcome to Section 9, where we talk about IT and information security. I'm Damian Hull.
And I'm Dorothy. And today, you're going to be talking about the Verizon Data Breach Report, right?
Yeah, and this is a really cool report. Comes out every year, and they've been doing it for the last 12 years. And there's some cool stuff in here, and this is something I should have been paying attention to before, because I've learned about this thing, or I knew about this for years. The question here is, how are the hackers getting in? That's the question the report's trying to answer. And one cool thing about this is that way back in the appendix, they have hacker debriefs by the Secret Service, which I thought was really cool because they're actually interviewing hackers that have been caught and are now in prison, and they're asking them, how did you do what you did? And they're learning a lot of information from that. So we'll get to that in a minute. Now, the report is all about evidence. This is not one of those things where we're talking about what we think the hackers are doing, what we think they're doing to get in. They're actually going out to organizations and they're asking them, have you had a security incident or actual breach? If so, will you share that information with us so we can learn something from that? How did the hackers get in? And so they analyzed 41,686 security incidents. 2,013 of those were confirmed data breaches. And that was for this year, or the 2019 report. So let's think about how a network is put together. And this is kind of like reflecting what we have and what a lot of other organizations have, right? You have the internet, and there's your firewall. And then inside the network, you have your switching, your servers, your workstations, your laptops, your Wi-Fi. And then a lot of organizations, including us, we have cloud, right? So we have things like DigitalOcean, we have Gmail. A lot of organizations are like that, whether you get like maybe Office 365, that's in the cloud. So that's a makeup of what a lot of organizations have. And so the question is, how are the hackers getting into our networks, getting into cloud, and gaining access to our information? So some of the things that I thought were interesting in the Verizon Data Breach Report, and we're, again, looking at this as, you know, information that we can use to find out how the hackers are getting in. They're using stolen credentials, social engineering, they're targeting executives. Ransomware is still a big deal, so you have to watch out for that. And then cloud is a target. So when we talk about stolen credentials, the report doesn't specify how they got those stolen credentials, but they're using stolen credentials, which is a sign of something like password reuse. So you might want to think about that, because if I steal credentials from, let's say, a web application or web server, let's say, for example, somebody hacks into your Facebook account, they may be able to use that username and password for your Gmail, for something else, right? So that's where they get the stolen credentials and possibly using those elsewhere. Because if the stolen credentials are for one thing only, well, then they're only going to be able to access one thing, not all your things. So that's something to think about. And then we talk about social engineering. They're trying to find ways in which they can get somebody to do something for them. And you have to think about hacking as, what's the simplest way for me to get what I want, which is money or your data? And if I can just have somebody give it to me, well, why not do that? So that's something you want to take into consideration. And then we have executives. Those are the ones being targeted because they're the ones that have access to all the information. They also have access to the money. Now, in our case, you and I are kind of like the executives because we have access to everything, right? There's only two of us, so both of us have to have admin access to pretty much all the things. So if somebody were to ask us to give them something, we have access to all of it. And so that's why executives get targeted, because they have access to everything. And then we have the ransomware. You want to watch out for that. And then cloud. Cloud is where the data sits, right? Now, we have data inside our network, but we also have cloud. A lot of organizations have cloud. If you're small, maybe you're all cloud, right? Maybe use something like Dropbox. In our case, like I said, we have DigitalOcean, we have Gmail, we have other things. The hackers are going to go where the data sits. And if it's in cloud, why not just go cloud? And then you need to make sure your cloud environment is kept safe and secure. With Gmail, not a lot we can do there because Google takes care of that. But on DigitalOcean, we have to maintain those servers. So we have to make sure those are kept safe and secure. And then we have affected assets. This is where, well, we'll go through this and we'll talk about why they're on the list. So we have workstations, web applications, and mail servers. These are the things that the hackers are targeting, and they're targeting them in different ways. So mail servers and web applications are kind of straightforward, right? They're on the internet And so the hackers have direct access to them. I can hack, you know, if you're the hacker, you know, you can be anywhere in the world, see the web application and try to find ways of hacking that application. You don't have to be on the inside of the network. When we talk about email servers, it could be like a cloud email server. So if it's like Gmail, well, maybe I can try to hack Gmail, or I can try to hack into an Office 365 email account or something like that, where you don't have to be on the inside of the network. And then the workstation one is interesting because that is on the inside of the network. So before we can talk about that piece, we have to talk about malware and how malware gets onto a system. So in the Verizon Data Breach Report and all of the stuff they analyzed, they found out that 94% of malware was delivered by email. And when they looked at the files that were in the email, 45% were Office documents. So now I know that a lot of the malware that gets onto my workstation is going to be by email, and a lot of it is going to be an Office document. So this is kind of how this begins to kind of take shape. You know, I'm sitting at my workstation. I'm a regular employee. I check my email. There's an Office document in my email. I click on it, and now it's doing things it shouldn't be doing. So you want to find ways in which you can kind of prevent that from happening. And we looked at, what was that? We have the critical security controls, and we talked once about the controls from Australia. One of the things that they talked about was making sure that the macros are turned off in Office. If you don't need those, don't turn them on. Leave them off, because that's allowing the hacker to send you the Office document with the macros in there and making it do something that you don't want it to do. And now your system's infected. And that's how they get in. And now we can talk about the hacker debriefs. And this is really cool because, again, they're talking to the actual hackers and they're finding out how they're doing what they do. Let's see here. They're looking at things like human error. You know, people make mistakes. They're taking advantage of that. Security complacency, you know, not paying attention to security at all, not having your, what do we call that? Cyber hygiene, where you're doing the first six critical security controls. And then technical deficiencies. So these would be things like not having certain technologies in place, or not turning on certain features, or not having certain kinds of configurations to make things more difficult to try to get into. And then once the hacker is on the inside, they're establishing continued access, they're obtaining administrative privileges, moving quietly to map the network, looking for open ports, locating the data, and then exfiltrating the data undetected for as long as possible. So those are some things you can think about in terms of what happens once the hacker is in there. But for most people, what you want to do is prevent the hacker from actually getting in the first place. And we also want to understand how the hacker is doing these kinds of things. They're doing their homework. They're researching, and they can actually go to the same websites we all go to. Like if you want to go to uscert.gov to see what the latest vulnerabilities are, well, so can the hackers. When we had Patch Tuesday, well, the hackers are paying attention to that because they want to know what things are being patched so that they can take advantage of some of that stuff, right? They can say, oh, if that's being patched, maybe there's a vulnerability. Let's go find out what that is. So those are some of the things that the hackers are doing to kind of figure out what you have and what kinds of vulnerabilities might be there in order to get in. And let's review the attack process here. So again, we have cloud and email servers and web servers, and we said those are all online. And so it's easier for the hacker to try to target some of those things because they can try to access that without having to be on the inside of your network. But then we can talk about like the inside piece. Malware gets onto a workstation through email. Malware could be an Office document. Lack of security could allow the Office document to take over. And then hackers establish continued access, and they do that other stuff we were talking about. Obtain administrative privileges, move quietly to map the network, look for open ports, locate the data, and then exfiltrate the data. And now it's all over. So any thoughts about all of that? I know we ran through that pretty quickly.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, you know, I keep thinking probably the easiest way, if they can get access to your email, then they have access to your cloud, pretty much. You know, like if they hack your Gmail, then they can have access to the cloud process of it, and they can set things up a little bit easier. It is kind of interesting because a lot of the targets that you mentioned, you know, I think people know, but not to that detail. Because before it was social engineering was the thing they did the most, because it was the easiest, I think. The human is probably the more vulnerable factor of a network because you have other things in place. But once you compromise that human or their email address or what have you, you know, it's a little tough.
Well, that's still on the list now. You know, that's why it's still part of the Verizon Data Breach Report, is because, like you said, the human is the one that's going to make that mistake. And they talked about human error. So if I'm the hacker and you're the person that I'm targeting because you have access to things I want to have access to, and you get the email and you make the mistake of not really checking to see where this came from and who it is and all of that kind of stuff, you may end up giving me what I want without even thinking about it.
Well, and another thing that I was kind of concerned was, you know, our patching, because, you know, we do have, we've been doing our patching with Automox, and I was thinking, well, what about those cumulative patches and some of the ones that don't go in right away and we have to wait for some of them, and then sometimes we have to wait past Patch Tuesday to make sure nothing's broken. How is that going to make us more vulnerable? And then I got to thinking, you know, we're not just patching. We're implementing the critical security controls. We're doing scan vulnerabilities, or we're planning to do those kind of things to secure our network. So it made me realize the importance of the layers of security and how you can really, you cannot depend on one thing and one thing only. It's kind of like a team effort, because if any of it gets compromised, you know, you may have some safety measures that can actually, you know, sure, the hacker can get in to a certain extent, but maybe they can't get in further. For example, they compromise the user. Now they have in on the network and they're trying to download some software that you have blacklisted because you did your homework and you set up your network properly. Now, all of a sudden, he's not going to be able to download that software because it's been like that. So I feel looking at what we've been doing in our process and listening to what you're talking about today, it makes me feel that security-wise, we're in the right track developing a process that is going to be the best it can be for us.
Exactly. And so when we look at those first six critical security controls, one of the things we have on there is inventory of hardware and then inventory of software. When we get to the software piece, they're talking about what you're saying. It's not blacklisting, it's whitelisting.
Whitelisting, I'm sorry.
You know, but there are products out there that do blacklisting. But if you whitelist and the hacker gets in, well, what are they going to do? You know, even if the hacker were to, say, make a connection to my workstation because I opened up something and it was malware and now the hacker has access. If I'm whitelisting, number one, it's going to be harder for them to get anything on my box because it won't install anything. Number two, if they do get access to my system, they're not going to be able to install anything because whatever they try to install, it's not going to be part of that whitelist.
Right, because when you're doing the inventory of software, you know what software your workstations and your devices are going to have. So you'll be able to exclude anything but what you're using, right? And then if they try to do that, it's going to be harder. But, you know, and not to say that this is a bulletproof safety, you know, you can't be like that. You're going to have to mitigate some of the risks that you're going to have and then develop a plan should the worst thing that could happen. How do you recover?
Exactly. So just to remind people that, you know, if the hacker is going to get into your particular network, in the inside of your network, how are they doing that? They're doing that probably through email. And then what's going to be in that email? Probably an Office document. So you can plan for that. Now that you know that's a thing, you can plan for that. We know that executives are going to be targeted. Why? They have access to everything. So why not just ask the executive to give the hacker what they want? So that's an issue. Social engineering is an issue. Cloud's an issue. So we have things, again, that we can now focus on because the Verizon Data Breach Report tells us these things. And when we line this up with the critical security controls or some from the Australian list, where they're turning off things like the macros in Office, will do these things. And that's going to make it harder for the hackers to get in because you're putting up roadblocks that are going to make it so difficult for the hacker to get in. Like when they're saying that they're looking at the vulnerabilities, they're watching Patch Tuesday, they're looking at things like USCert.gov, they're taking advantage of those vulnerabilities. Why not make it harder for them by patching?
They have access to the same information we do. If we learn about a vulnerability to try to patch or to, you know, to get our network so it doesn't happen to us, they know about that and they can exploit it while we're trying to figure out a way to secure it.
Yeah, and then when we talk about some of the more advanced stuff, so the stuff that we're talking about is really prevention. And prevention, because we're targeting those smaller organizations. Large ones are going to be a bit different, and they may have security teams. So when we talk about our business and trying to help others secure their network, for the most part, we're going to be targeting those small businesses, medium-ish kind of businesses, organizations that don't necessarily have a security team or understanding of how security works. Prevention is really all they're going to be able to accomplish. You know, they're going to have to do things like patching, turning off the macros in Office, you know, making sure their executives know that, hey, if you get an email, double check and verify, or maybe make that part of what your organization does. If you get an email from somebody, you're not so sure who it is, double check and verify. If they're asking for money, double check and verify. You know, those are some things that you can do to help keep your organization safe and secure. And then on the more advanced type of stuff, that's where you start looking for the hackers once they're in. And that's something that you always hear the professionals talk about, the experts, the ones who do this for a living. They're always talking about detecting the hackers that are already inside your network. That's a really difficult thing to do. And if you don't have, let's say, the first six critical security controls in place, you're never going to be able to get detection as part of your process, because you don't have what you need to make that happen.
Yeah, and one of the things that we had in that SANS cheat sheet that we did, it was like, how do you detect someone in your network? Because how can you secure or protect yourself from someone that you cannot see?
Yeah, and that cheat sheet's great. The problem with it is that it's manual.
Yeah.
So you would have to see it as it's happening almost, because the hacker is going to try to cover their tracks. So if you're not checking manually all of the things that they're talking about, how are you going to see that? You may miss it.
No, I mean, I just bring it up because I think it'd be a good way for people to actually go through it, take a look at it, and see what it looks like when someone's in.
And it's a good thing to do for practice. It's also a good thing to do just to be aware of what's happening with your systems, because it's not just going to help you with the hackers. It's going to help you understand how your system's operating. You know, does it have enough RAM? Does it have enough processing power? Are there any error messages in the system? And then, are there any hackers that are actually in your system doing things they shouldn't be doing? You may actually end up seeing that. Like when we do SSH, we look at that when we do the default setup. What do you see? All kinds of IP addresses trying to log into the system right after you put it online.
Yeah, and I cannot thank DigitalOcean enough, you know, and we're not affiliated with them. We're just using their services, but they have an incredible way of showing you how, when they told us to remove the root login, the remote root login, right? And then just the way how they have instructions for you to securely do your servers. Like I said, I was mortified when I saw how many people were trying to log in for the first 10 minutes with admin 12345, you know? I mean, it was like admin password. We had all this, and they were, it seems like they were sequential IP addresses. It was incredibly crazy.
Yeah, so they have ways of doing that automatically. So these are things that you have to be aware of.
And no, and this is something really important as well that kind of brings the point what you were talking about. When you make it harder for the hacker to get in because you have your security and you set up your network in a certain way, they're going to try to get in with this automatic thing. They're going to go, not working. They move on to something that is easier and they be able to get in, because why try harder when you don't have to if there is somebody out there that has their network not set up properly or not secured?
Exactly. And so those are things that I want to take into consideration. So is there anything else you want to add to this?
No.
I think this is good. Again, there's a lot of things you can get from the Verizon Data Breach Report. This is just scratching the surface, and I've got to go back to that and do a more in-depth dive into the information that's in there.
Although I do have one more thing. I'm sorry. If you had to recommend parts of the report to people from differences, you know, different experiences, like I'm not very experienced, how easy is it to understand the report? You know, like, for somebody that is savvy in IT like yourself and other people out there that may be listening, and somebody that is more in my boat that is really trying to learn, but some of the things are going to be a little bit harder to understand. What would you recommend about the report for them to be able to really understand how valuable this is and the information that they can.
I would start with the summary report. The summary is actually really good, gives you the highlights, tells you some of the interesting or more important pieces of the overall report. I would start there. And then if you want, you can go and look at the rest of the report. But I recommend you read at least the summary because that has a lot of good information in there. And then you can take a look at the rest of it. And as I said, I've got to go back to the report and I may read it several times over to try to figure out what is this actually saying about certain things and how do I use this information to help keep not only myself secure, but others as well. So that's something I'm going to be working on because, again, it's talking about how the hackers get in and then we can use that information to help us, you know, prevent them from actually making it in by we put up roadblocks like application whitelisting, patching. Those are things that can prevent the hackers from getting in. So I think that's it. If you have any comments or questions, you can email us at info@section9.us. If you want to take a look at our show notes, you can go to osnap.section9.us. And thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening.